We've all seen the ads back in the day in the back of magazines, commercials on TV, in the phone book. Escorts. They're paid to spend time with clients. But what really happens? I'm Lexi, and this is Delightfully Different. My next guest is an actor, turned escort, turned author and playwright, and now an actor again. She's written two books and has a solo show debuting this week in Chicago.
Hi, my name is Isadora Oboto most of the time. that's my actor name, my person name. And I'm also a writer under Seffi Haven. And I'm an actress, a writer, a former escort, a playwright, and back to acting as of really soon.
It's so much stuff. I'd love to start at the beginning, because when you went to school, you went to Juilliard.
Correct. Yes, I did.
Not easy to get into. In fact, they have one of the lowest acceptance rates of schools in the United States, and only 950 students get to go. So that's really special that you got in.
You know, if I had known that then, what you just said, I wouldn't have auditioned. I'm like, there's no way. But I think I just got lucky, you know.
Well, I doubt that you just got lucky. You had to be good. And you said you auditioned. Everybody has to audition. What was that process like?
It was long, actually. Not their audition, but the leading up to it, you know, the working on picking out what pieces you might do and working on those over and over every single day until you felt ready. And then the process was, at the time, there was something called the League of Professional, League of Drama Schools. And there was only 14 in the country that made it into that status.
Okay.
And so, you know, and there was like NYU and Yale and Juilliard and Washington State, I think was one, SMU. But in any case, so they had auditions on one day in each different region of the country.
So
I was in Chicago. And so I went to the Drake Hotel where, you know, tons of other hopefuls were. And we auditioned all day. I think it was 14 different schools, 14 different auditions. And Juilliard was my last one. And I was really sure I didn't get in. But
but you did get in. And not only did you get in, but you ended up graduating from Juilliard.
I did, yeah.
How did that feel that day you graduated?
It was actually bittersweet. First of all, I was going to miss all my, I thought we might stay together, our really close, tight-knit group. But when we go to Julia, the great thing is at the very end, we each get 6 minutes to audition in front of every casting director and agent in the country, which is an opportunity most people get.
Right.
And you hope that this will create a career for you. You're going to leave school and go straight into a career, because if you don't have a way in, you could be not acting for the rest of your life.
Right.
So mine did not go so well. I auditioned very well. I had great scene partners. I did great scenes. It was great. Aaron Sorkin, who is Aaron Sorkin, but at the time was just Aaron Sorkin. this was pre A Few Good Men, was there doing an article on the Rolling Stone magazine. And he followed myself and Andre Brower and this guy named Michael Loudon around and kind of wrote an article for the Rolling Stone on what it was like to graduate these, you know, schools. And okay. So when Andre did very well, Michael did very well. When I finished, I had nothing. Nobody wanted me. So Aaron sort of saved me in some way. He called me and said, this is weird. And I said, thank you, because I'm going to commit suicide right now. And he said, I'm going to ask if that's okay. Why? And I said, that would be great. Excuse me. So he went to casting directors and agents that would take his call. And they all said things like, you know, she's not very good looking. I wouldn't know what to do with her. She's not castable. One person even said, well, she's not very fuckable. So I was like, oh, okay. And I know I'm not Hollywood beautiful, but, and at that time too, you know, either you were Pamela Anderson or you were her ugly girlfriend.
Okay.
So it was
1988. Okay.
So, you know, it was the age of Benetton too, where, you know, if you were exotic in a really exotic way, that was good, but not in a nice Jewish girl way.
Okay.
So it was devastating, really. So I was sort of thrown back into the pit of starting over again. And I think too, looking back now, it made so much of a scar on my self-esteem that I don't think I ever got over it.
I'm sure.
In the working times of my life. you know, now I'm older and I'm like, I don't know, whatever.
It sounds devastating because also on top of it, you are a beautiful woman. And that's, it's insanity to me to that. That's that feedback you were getting that, that you weren't a beautiful enough. The '80s were an interesting time.
They were. It's still kind of true today, you know,
right.
But we do have a lot more places for women to work and different types of women.
Right.
So there's still barriers to entry, but yeah, looks are not quite as integral in the way that they were.
So you find yourself not landing any of these acting gigs and you've got a lot of debt and you're living in a very expensive city, New York City, one of the most expensive cities in the world. And then you end up seeing an ad.
Yeah. So I thank God for student loans, right? So I was about $100,000 in debt in the '80s, which is, you know, huge amount today, or then even, and just unlivable really. So I did see this ad. I think people should read the book, but the ad was promising thousands of dollars. And I didn't even make that in a month, you know? So I was like, how could they possibly promise this? And all it was supposed to be escorting men to places. Okay. And I thought, well, yes, out to dinner or, you know, to a charity ball. Well, that sounds lovely.
And I looked this up. This is perfectly legal in most states, and it's considered just spending time with another person for money, and it's not sex.
Well, that's what they said in the ad.
Okay.
I think, yeah. And so it turned into be, you know, what we think of as the escort business, which was different in the '80s than it became as time went by. But yeah.
Really? How is it different now than it was in the '80s?
Well, in the '80s, there was escort agencies. It was okay. Impossible for most girls to be independent. There was no way to be really because advertising in the Yellow Pages, which was an old time book that we used to have to look numbers up in. Advertising in that big book called the Yellow Pages that we sat our kids on during turkey dinners, were thousands of dollars a month. So most girls could never afford that. So right. We worked for agencies, which was great. I mean, we made 50-50 split. But what that meant was when people called for you, it was a little less personal because it was by the hour, you know.
Oh, okay.
They could keep you for more hours, but it was still, and then you could form personal relationships, but they would still call through the agency. And there was kind of, I mean, about a decade before me, there was that book by Xavier Hollander called The Happy Hooker.
Okay.
And it was the first time an escort spoke out and said, hey, why is this illegal? This isn't so bad. What's y'all problem? You know? And I was feeling like, this is shameful. This is horrible because I'm from a really good, loving family. And I didn't want my parents to be upset or have them ever, or anyone in my life, find out. It was
right.
A shameful thing. And when people did find out at the time, I was pretty heavily ostracized. So I knew it had to be a secret. But it was a shame because actually, it turned out to be, there were dangers, of course, and there were things that weren't great. But on the whole, it was the least debasing job I ever had in my life.
Really?
Yeah, it was the best job. And if I was still young and pointy and gravityless, I would still do it. But unfortunately, gravity has taken hold.
So the process is somebody calls the agency, which the agency kind of is acting as a middleman, somewhat of a pimp or a madam, even though they're technically, it's an agency, it's not one person.
I would say, you know, those words are interesting because when you have any field, no matter what field, there's going to be different umbrellas of it. You could say I work in computers and you could be a computer inventor. You could be a computer systems analyst. You could also just be typing, you know. So there's so many different levels to that. So when you say pimp or madam, that implies more of a brothel situation or a slave situation, which isn't at all what I was in. But unfortunately, it's a really good point. Because society doesn't know too much about what we do, they put us all in one can. And so, unfortunately, and the reason it's unfortunate is not just for people like me, but for girls who are being trafficked.
Yes.
People who need help, you know, the focus should be on those people, getting them help rather than consensual adults, you know, men and women who, guys who just want blowjobs and girls who are like, I'll do it, you know.
So your situation is not the same as, it's like, my next question was going to be, what's the difference between an escort and a prostitute? Because, I mean, I feel like the image in the head is the stuff we see on TV where there's a lady on the street corner wearing barely anything, flagging down dudes that are driving by. That's not what you did.
No.
And there was nobody forcing you to do what you did. You chose to do this on your own.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, definitely not a human trafficking situation.
No, I'm going to ask you a question.
Okay.
So how many times in your girl life have you been on dates with guys and you think he likes you, but really he just wants sex?
Oh, almost every date.
And if you don't put out, then you've just used him for like steak and Cabernet or whatever, right?
I always got a hamburger.
Oh, hamburger. Okay. Hamburger and a soda. Yeah. You got to put out for that, girl. So, you know, there's so many times in my life I thought, well, after I started, I didn't think this before, but once I started working, I thought, oh, wait a minute. You mean all I have to do is do what I did for free so many times and this will save my life? Oh, okay. And I get to be in control of it instead of him being in control of it, you know, because sex is power. This is the one place we have the advantage. So, yeah.
So you don't feel like you were being taken advantage of. You felt like this was an empowering situation for you.
On the whole, I did. I mean, I think within society, it's the place that we live, you and me, and in this country, I don't know about other countries. I'll just speak for our country. There's a lot of, we grew up under a patriarchy, you know, and whether you feel it strongly or feel it not so much, it's there. And women are sort of second class citizens in some way, you know, some women not, most women, yes. And we're kind of at the mercy of that. Would it, in a perfect society, would I have chosen this job? No. You know, I would have hoped that I would have had opportunities to go to college without being $100,000 in debt for the rest of my life. I would have hoped that men and women were not transactions to each other. But we don't live in that society. Right. And so within the bounds of our society, you know, if you live in a zoo, you got to be a good zoo animal. You know, I was the best kept hippo, you know.
So, well, while you were doing the escorting, were you also still auditioning and trying to get acting gigs?
For a while I did. And then I even left the business to do several years of acting. I got a lot of regional theater. But then it became every time I, you know, you make, you're working, you're an actor, you do the best you can. In America, I don't know how it is. I'm only going to speak for America. We don't support our arts very well. And back in the 80s, Reagan took away the National Endowment for the Arts. And most people are like, if you do it, you'll get exposure. I'm not going to pay you. So it's this kind of culture. So there's either this 1% of people that make a lot. There used to be a middle class of actors that made a pretty decent living, but that's what the strike that's happening is about, because we're not.
Yeah.
And most people don't. So I was working full time as an actor, making $300 a week.
Oh.
And it was, I was working full time and I loved it, but $300 a week after agent, after taxes is very little to live on.
Right.
It was very hard to stay an actor. So I used to go back to escorting in between so I could afford to stay an actor. It was like, I got to do this to do that. You know, it was a trade-off.
As an escort, how much did your services cost?
Well, eventually, I mean, they changed all through the time. So when I first started, it was $200 or $300 an hour minus 50-50 split with the agency.
Okay. So you're making significantly more money as an escort. Like, you're able to support yourself now.
Yes, the $300 a week I made as an actor, I was making in one night, you know, easy. So, but then as time went by, and I became an independent escort, worked for myself, eventually I could make, you know, 500 to 1,000 an hour.
Wow. So you were able to cut out that middleman and just do it for yourself eventually.
Yeah. It takes a lot of work to be independent.
I'm sure.
A lot. It was much more than people think. Like if you think, oh, it's so easy, you just lay there. It's like, no. It's a full time thing, and your time is not your own, you know, but it's worth it because you know, you're making a ton of money. So
absolutely. Now, were there other actors that were doing this sort of a thing too? Or do you, are you the only one that you really knew of that was doing it professionally like this?
I didn't know at all. I loved the other girls. We were a family. We took care of each other. You know, if a guy was a little cuckoo, you'd call each other. If a guy liked some, you know, said, do you know so-and-so? What does he, oh yes, he likes wigs and stockings on him, not you, you know, like that kind of thing.
So you had a support system with the other women.
Support system. There was a grapevine underground because we had nobody to take care of us. Right. So there was this great thing. I didn't know other actors, but I knew there were several girls who were, what do you call it when girls, not girls, when people like horses, you know, they have stables and they take care of horses and they ride and they do the shows and the riding shows. And
do equestrian.
Equestrian. Thank you. Yeah. Yes. yes. Equestrian stuff. Several girls did that.
Really?
Some girls.
It's an expensive thing to take care of. And
well, it was their passion. There was other girls who went into animal rescue, who like fostered animals, and lots of girls had other different ambitions. One girl I worked with in early days earned enough to get to law school and went to law school. You know, so there were girls doing a lot of things, but needing to make money to make their dreams come true because they didn't come from money.
Wow. You know? Incredible. Now, you said that you kept this a secret for a long time and then it got out. Did it get out before you wrote it all down, or did someone discover your secret?
Well, I tried to start a long time ago. I tried to start a theater company. The person I started it with, who is now a famous actor, but he decided one day to come into the theater company and tell everybody what I did for a living and tell everybody we were disbanding. Because it was debasing and I was a horrible person and so forth. It's okay. It was a long time ago. But then the word got around and some people I was friends with were really supportive in their own way. And other people were, I never heard from again.
I'm Lexi, and this is Delightfully Different. Today, I'm talking with Isadora Oboto, a.k.a. Steffi Haven. She's a former escort who is now an author and playwright with a solo show debuting this week.
What about your family? Did they find out?
No, my family didn't know and I never told them. And recently, so frightening, I kind of hoped that if they did secretly know, they would come to me and say, hey, we know, we still love you. It's okay. I either want to know about it or don't want to know about it so that I would feel okay. But nobody ever did. So I just assumed they didn't know. But recently doing the play, it's been on, you know, Instagram and other things.
Yeah.
yeah. And apparently my different members of my family found out and some are coming to the play, which is going to be, I mean, that's lovely and supportive, obviously, but I'm a little, I don't know, a little jagged, but I'm like, oh my God, what are we going to be
doing? They're going to be out there. I feel like we should mention you've got the two books that you wrote, My Horizontal Life and Escort's Tale, the first 6 months. And then you also have A Someday Courtesan, a memoir and stories, My Horizontal Life. And now you have your one woman show, your solo show coming out of play about your life called My Horizontal Life. And this is what they're coming to that you're speaking about. Tell me a little bit about the stage performance. You live in California and it's in Chicago.
Yeah. Well, there's reasons for that, but I'm from Chicago. My director's from Chicago. Chicago. So we all grew up kind of in Chicago in the acting world there. And when we tried to do the play in Los Angeles or, you know, which is where we would, it just is not a theater town. And so it just became a little bit, there was too many weird little obstacles that we shouldn't have to be jumping through. So we thought, why not do it in a place where people love to go see the theater? So we picked Chicago. So we've been working all of us on Zoom and a little bit in person. It's been weird. Never done theater performance like that. But the show is not about the books. My first book, My Horizontal Life, which is spelled with a W.
I'll have links.
no, it's okay. I'm just saying. Is just the first 6 months of me in the business.
Okay.
The show spans almost my entire career at a certain point. It stops at a certain point, but it spans about three decades. So it goes through life as an escort, life as an artist, and life in love or not in love. And it's really about you know, claiming your voice in a way as a woman and about
this
compassion.
This is a 90-minute show, and it's solo of you all up there by yourself being vulnerable about everything that's happened to you. Are you nervous at all about this?
Yes, I'm not nervous telling this story because I've come to the place where I'm like, hey, you know, I'm older. If you don't like it, you know, I'm so sorry. But I'm nervous because I haven't been on stage in the theater alone on stage in a very long time. And it's a lot of lines. I think I needed every one of them or I wouldn't have wrote them. But but it's just me. And so I'm nervous about that. And And then we're filming on the last day and the day after. So we have it.
If anybody is not in Chicago to see your performance, we'll be able to see it somewhere online in the future on Abbott's. Going to be somewhere.
I don't know. Like, I don't know what we're planning on doing with that archival film. We'll see. I don't know if we're putting it up or not. But
well, I hope we get to see it someday.
Thank you.
How has this, when you were an escort, well, first of all, you're quoted as saying you're not just an escort, but the number one, you were the number one escort in the country. Were you an escort in other cities besides New York City?
Oh yeah. Yeah. We travel everywhere. So, you know, overseas and those. Yeah. But my base was New York City. So there was this, I didn't know because at the time I didn't have a computer and there was this thing called the computer and, you know, the websites and things. I was like, what's that? this little hovel of love. But there was this websites that developed that men started creating. One was called the Big Doggy. One was called the Erotic Review. But at the time, the first one was the Big Doggy. And it was all these men talking to each other. Like, I saw this girl in Pensacola and she was scary. She had a guy outside the door. Don't go see her. And other guys are like, oh, I saw this great girl in Montreal and she's lovely and so forth. So they were kind of sharing information. Well, as guys do, they love to like put numbers and rank things, you know, because they like numbers and ranking. So they started ranking the girls. And at one point, I personally started getting really busy and I didn't know why. I was like, oh my God, booked 2 months in advance. And I asked people, why did you come to see me? And they're like, because you're number one. I'm like, no, you're number one. And I finally went down to the library and looked on the computer. There was this website, Big Doggy Escort Reviews. And I was number one in the country for that year. And then another year. And I think I was number one for 3 or 4 or 5 years. I don't remember. I have it somewhere, but it was 1999 to maybe 2002 or three, you know.
Well, congratulations. What is it that makes a number one escort? What was the thing that they liked?
I think that I was a person and cared about them. Like that I was actually a person and they were a person to me.
I feel like there's more conversation than people realize when it comes to prostitution and escorts and stuff. Did you find yourself having less sex and more conversation with people?
I think there's a sexual, wonderful sexual aspect, a positive sexual aspect, an accepting, loving, positive aspect, taking people through. So this is what I think would be so wonderful that I gave, you know, which is you can surrender. I will take control. You can let go. I will transport you. I am your net. How many times does the man do that for you? Oh, I don't know. You know, like I've got this and you are safe with me no matter what, you know? And that's, I think, a nice sexual aspect. I think the personal aspect is really nice too, because how many times in the day can you go to somebody and say, I just want to talk and laugh and we can just talk and laugh and they appreciate you just as you are without judgment, just enjoying you. And so I think that was the gift of it that I felt I got from them and they got from me. And I think it was mutual. Well, I don't know about everybody, but.
Was there ever a time that you got hurt or you thought your life was in danger?
Yes. One time, and it was because I was arrested. And I was very scared because it was police who I was alone in a room with, and I didn't feel safe with them, of course. And they thought of me as a whore, a hooker, whatever. They couldn't see I was a person. And I felt truly like a dolphin caught in a tuna net.
Wow.
I just felt like I was strangling. I was so scared. I've never had anything bad happen to me from any gentleman I've ever seen in my entire working life. Never. Now, part of that is because I'm in a different place than women on the street or children who are being marketed, which is a whole right. different thing. I know how to screen calls. I know what I'm looking for. I know what not to take. You know what I mean? So there's right. there's things like that. But I made a mistake and saw this man who turned out to be a police officer, and you know, I got arrested, and it was
you were most scared of the people that were supposed to be there to protect you.
They don't protect you. What we're doing is against the law in America. Right. So, you know,
in some places, in some places,
most places now. Yeah.
Yeah. Were there any times that were in particular good? Do you have did you create any relationships or have anything really good come out of this?
Besides, definitely. Know, a lot of money. Definitely. I have relationships with girls that are forever friends. Forever. We're no longer in the business, but we are best friends. I have relationships with gentlemen who I've known for decades that are now much older than me, but dear friends. And I love them, you know, and they love me. And so, for instance, doing this play, there's no way I could have done this play without doing like a Kickstarter. So we did. And I don't know if anybody was going to donate or not, but the people who donated lovingly and the most and enthusiastically were male friends of mine who all wanted to see, even the ones that I hadn't seen for 20 years are like, "You're finally doing it." I'm like, "I know, I talked your ear off about this. I'm finally doing it." Or ex-boyfriends who still liked me, who were like, not liked me, but you know, were like, "God, I can't believe you're doing it." And I'm like,
Well, it's so interesting. What are some misconceptions that people might have about escorts and sex workers in general?
Oh my God. I think that's a whole can of worms. I think just what you said in the beginning, which is what you picture, you know, you picture a girl on the street corner, you picture a girl with a lot of issues, maybe drug issues, you picture pimps, you picture all these things, or you picture these really modelly looking girls who are just mercenary and just, you know, it's so not true. Some of the nicest women I ever knew were escorts, because it requires you to be loving.
Hmm. That makes a lot of sense. So when did you decide that you were going to write everything down? Where were you?
I've been writing it forever since I started. In toilet paper, in bathrooms, on cocktail. Yeah, but I didn't get to a place where I could finally put to words in the satisfying way that I felt like, okay, I'm saying it. And if they don't get it from this, then they're never going to get it, or they don't want to get it. You know, but I'm satisfied that I said it. And that was only the past couple of years where I finally, the play took 10 years to write. So, but I wrote other things for a long time.
So when did you quit doing it? When did you leave, and how did you get out?
You know, you don't get out ever clean. You kind of trickle out, you know? So I don't know. I stopped seeing people as much. I started focusing more on my writing. I started doing other things. I had some money not a lot of money saved at all, but just enough to get by. So I was back to broke at one point. I tried to build a house in Florida, and I did, but she stole my entire life savings. So everything I ever made in my life was stolen. So then I was back to ground zero.
And oh, that was really?
Yeah. Yeah, because Florida.
I know, I used to live there.
Yeah.
But now you've got yourself together. It's like you've come out of it. Are you married? Do you have kids and all that stuff?
No, I'm not married. But I haven't really come out of it, but I got to a place of, I'm very poor right now. I live in a tiny little apartment, but if I'm going to do my art, then I'm going to do my art. Let's just do it. And if I starve the way I starved before, that's what it's going to be, you know?
Right. And so I saw that you do some stand-up comedy.
I did for a little while.
Not anymore, huh?
Well, I loved trying it, and I loved the being on stage. It's a lot to write. I'm not a natural. I think I'm naturally humorful, but not a natural joke writer. Right. So it was a lot of work for me, and you have to get up on stage a lot. And in LA, that meant a lot of driving or Ubers, and it became a really difficult lifestyle for it to do it. So I just couldn't keep it up. And while I was there, a woman there named Ada Rodriguez, who's a brilliant comedian, said to me, "You should be writing this in a book, because I was doing escort material. And if you don't, people are going to take it from you." And I thought, well, no one's going to take it because I'd have to do it. You know, they'd have to know what they're talking about. But I thought that she's right. If I took all the time that I was trying to do stand up and put that into writing a book, I'd have a book instead of just a 15 minute set, you know?
Right.
So that's what I did. I just went off and wrote my first book.
And you know, is the book funny? Because your stand up was very funny. I mean, you had a very humorous take on what you did.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
And is your performance going to be funny too, as you're talking about it? It sounds like you might have some humorous tales in there.
Oh, I hope so. I mean, it's a serious story, but I hope that it's really fun to watch and that people laugh through it and they have a great time. And I know that this might be this is the premiere, but also maybe the only time. I don't know. We'll see what happens to shows, you know, but it would be, I hope so. I hope that people laugh through it.
I hope that they do too. I was definitely laughing during some of that stand up.
You
raised funds because you plan on doing this film. And are you still raising funds for it?
Well, we raised, you know, I think we raised 50,000, which is all gone. And I also spent much money out of my own pocket, and I did have other people come back in and help. So we're way, way over budget because we have the film and we needed the set to look really special in order for the film. I could probably do it on my own with sound and lights with a chair, you know, but we needed it to be a special production for the film. So yeah, it cost a lot.
But are you still raising funds? Do you still need, do you still have a fundraising campaign going on?
We don't have it going on, but if anybody wants to,
you'll take the money.
We're so in debt.
Well, man, you've got quite the incredible story. I hope that you put your performance online so that I can see it after it's done, because I obviously can't make it to Chicago next week. No. And I'm definitely going to be reading your books.
Thank you.
My last question is, are you proud of the life that you've lived and how far you've come?
I am. I don't know if I'd say proud. I would say I think I did good with what I had, and I think I touched people and they touched me. And what more do you want from life than having relationships with people that you mattered to in some deep way? And so I think that's a great thing. If I had to do it again, I would hope I would have had an acting career, but
well,
it's not going to happen.
I saw you were on IMDb. You have some acting credits. You've landed some roles.
Credits, but you know, when you talk about a career, it's something that you do for a living that supports you and that people know your name. And if you wanted to work, a casting director would say, "Oh, let's call Isadora. She'd be great for this part." And you're working and you're taking scripts and, you know, but I don't have that, and doubtful that I'll have it now, unless, you know, I have one of those careers as an older woman playing the mother of somebody. And I'm like, "Raymond, come over here," you know?
Well, I'm honored that you took the time out of your day to talk to me. I really appreciate it. I learned so much stuff and you are so interesting.
Oh, Lexi, you are so sweet to ask me. And it was really a pleasure to meet you.
Thank Likewise.
Links to Isadora's books and her performance are listed with this podcast. I was definitely surprised to hear how positive of an experience Isadora had working as an escort. While escorting is legal, it's not supposed to include sex, but we all know that that's not what happens. Prostitution is only legal in certain areas of Nevada in the United States. It's also legal in 21 other countries. What Isadora engaged in is not the same as human trafficking. Human trafficking is the recruitment, transportation, transfer, harboring, or receipt of people through force, fraud, or deception with the aim of exploiting them for profit. Isadora was willing to engage in escorting and was even her own boss eventually. If you believe you've witnessed human trafficking, call the National Human Trafficking Hotline at 1-888-373-7888. Thanks for joining me this week on Delightfully Different. If you or someone you know lives life differently, I'd love to chat. Email me at lexiontheradio@gmail.com. That's lexiontheradio@gmail.com, or go to delightfullydifferentpodcast.com. Coming up next Thursday, I talk to a professional sand sculptor. he gets to play in the sand for a living. Until next time, have a delightful week.